Welcome, venturers, to another steamy slice of Venture Maidens! Before we hop into episode 21 of Favor, I want to update you with some news. As of today, August 15th, 2022, we are so super duper close to the digital version of the Venture Maidens campaign guide being 100% done. When that marvelous moment occurs, all you fine folks who backed the Kickstarter will be able to grab the final digital PDF through BackerKit. And those of you who missed the Kickstarter will now be able to purchase the final PDF on the 2C Gaming website store. So make sure to follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Venture Maidens, and hop into our community Discord server to get the alert that moment that digital version goes live. I also want to take the time to thank Emily Mayo for composing our theme song, and thank Tabletop Audio for providing all additional ambient music. A huge thank you as well to the folks who donate to the show each month via Patreon. You are our one and only source of income, and we could not be here without you. It means the world to us to have you and your big dang hearts in our corner. That's all the hot gas for this week, so let me hit you with that sweet recap. Last time on Venture Maidens, our heroes continued their research about Penny Dreadful and the missing Enigma Codex. Lou and Rook bullied their way into a major payday by fencing Tandy's gold bars. Tony tried her hand at brewing healing potions. Aoife learned about the Codex's gruesome history from a retired rare book collector named Tortimer, and got the address of Penny's last known location. With precious little time left to complete their quest, the crew made their final preparations, said goodbye to Coven, and headed off to track down their quarry in the changeling town of Storyville. And that's the whole banana. Now let's dive right into the action.
Gather round, travelers, to hear our tale. An unending rain threatens to drown our heroes headed to Changeling Town, and monstrous beings await all who step beyond its gate. Weather the weather, as we head into Favor, episode 21, Take by Storm.
Hello, hello, everybody. Welcome back. It's another episode of Venture Maidens. Oh, boy. Oh, boy. I'm so happy to be here, seeing all your faces. It's been a very exciting week at Venture Maidens since the campaign guide is officially out in community PDF form. So it's been like a mudslide, a good mudslide of awesome VM stuff all week. I couldn't think, was that like a surf, a wave? What is a good mudslide?
Well, you're reducing it down to mud, first of all. So
okay. Yep. Well, that's my descriptive words have failed me, so I'm so glad we're here. I'm about to play some D&D, and that'll be just fine. I'm sure that'll be just fine. But anyway, hey, everybody, we're the Venture Maidens. We're a D&D 5th edition actual play podcast. Live stream that converts to a podcast and posts everywhere. Before we dive into tonight's action, I should mention this is a very adult themed stream, so you can expect to see themes of body horror, and specifically for this episode, we have a couple more content warnings, including abduction and xenophobia are two that might come up tonight. So if those are things you don't feel like handling or listening to right now, this may not be the episode for you. But with that out of the way, let's dive in. Let's get Feywild. So hey, everybody, my name is Celeste Konowich, and tonight I will be your Dungeon Master.
Hello, I'm Katie, and I'm going to be playing Laverie Sath, your Drow Rogue.
Hello, I'm Nassim, and I'm playing your half-orc fighter, Vitonia Silvertail.
And I'm Sage, and I'm your bootylicious bard, Aoife Flannery.
Ooh, that's a good one. Just feeling hot after like boyfriend episode last time.
Yes. Heck yeah. That's right, exactly.
Heck yeah.
We need to nip that in the bud. Okay.
Why? I think he passed the Parentites test.
Oh, absolutely.
So. Cool. So, yeah, that is where we are picking up. We had just last time ended officially, so you had spent 3 weeks now in Coven, which had been kind of a nice recovery time slash, like, getting what you needed, getting more established in the town. You finally had a chance to settle, breathe, establish roots that you've all been putting into this place. But now that time is at an end, because now you have 1 week. 1 week remaining to get the Enigma Codex from this Archfey, get the Codex, bring it back to Hecate, and fulfill Tony's end of this favor that is owed. So, 1 week, which means, I think, just at the end of last time, we had assembled back at the house and stuff, and now here we are, and we can talk about a plan. You have a bunch of different clues. You know what the Enigma Codex is now. You have a pretty good idea of where you can even just start looking for Penny. So what's the plan, gang?
Definitely got to go to Storyville. And we got to go to the Pendragon and 16 Briar Rose Lane, room 3, I remember, was the address. And then I don't have high hopes, but then we just kind of pray that this book hasn't driven Penny mad, which I doubt.
Oh, are you kidding me? I feel like
you
couldn't keep your eyes off that thing.
For
if there's
sure.
a word coming, it would be impossible to catch up. You have to sit there for eternity.
And that's like the legends too, that Tortimer, one of the reasons he didn't want to tell you everything, Aoife, was like, they're just bad. Badness has followed whoever has had this book. Yeah, just having access to so much information and on demand, it can poison one very quickly. And she's had this book now, I guess, she's been missing for about 80 years, so...
She's gonna be nuts. Yeah, because he had said, too, like, it's just literally everything that's written down ever, so that people can't figure out what's real anymore, basically, since there's no discrepancy.
Yeah, it doesn't say this is a book or like this is a news article or whatever. It does. It just, it's all in there, right? So who knows?
Cool. So yeah, I mean, we have to go there, find her. We can't. The original plan of let's give her a book to trade isn't going to work because
out the window.
She's got literally every book published and otherwise. So I feel like the plan is get there and see what happens.
Help us help you.
Yeah. It does seem like, yeah, that book bargaining chip is off the table now. So good thing you found that out.
Yeah.
Before you dropped hundreds of gold on a very nice first edition or whatever. Okay.
I mean, she still might appreciate it for the sentimental value.
We go find out. Give her your diary, Aoife.
A real, true first edition.
One of a kind.
She's already read her diary, guys.
Yeah.
I know. It's the only book we have.
We hate
epic
books.
Readers in this group.
No, we hate books in this house. Oh, God. I can feel Arnidal dying somewhere. But
a scream is heard in the distance.
For real. All right, to Storyville.
To Storyville, yeah. So, obviously, the Chicken Hut can get there because you know that Storyville is located in between, which is the region of the wilds that isn't owned by a court and, well, owned or controlled by a court is more accurate, or controlled by one of the Archfey. So, it's this nebulous space in between. So you should have no problem getting there using the hut, and that will probably take maybe an hour or so. So you'll have plenty of time to get there. And you do have an address. You don't know what you're going to find there, cause since it was just a shipping address where books went, but apparently Penny was fond of this town and had some kind of relationship with the changelings who lived there.
Where are we at for Rook age count?
Oh, right. So if she would have been, let's see, I think we calculated it was like 42 or something. Because it's been.
Right.
Okay, so 7, 14, 21. So then she's 38. So she's still good.
Okay, good. I was like, are we going to have to leave grandma at home? Like,
no.
Okay.
So I got to say, I'm looking forward to Cougar Rook.
Cougar Rook is looking forward to you.
Yeah, she needs some real interested in spending a lot of time with you over the last week, so.
Oh, God. Can't wait to see how that unfolds. But before we move forward, we should distribute health potions so that if we fight something, we're ready.
Yeah. I give one to each of you.
And are you hanging on to two? Tony?
No, I'll give one to Rook, too, I imagine.
Oh, okay, cool.
Doesn't she need one?
Yeah, man. She's just a human. She's just a human now.
Yeah.
She needs all the help she can get. Cool. Yeah, so this is the last opportunity for a while to be in a town spot. So any other business y'all want to do before we go on a section of adventure?
Aoife would just take a moment to say goodbye to Kel and be like, you know, I'm heading out. We're going on an adventure. Don't worry about us. And not tell him anything.
Not tell him. Yeah, I was going to ask, do you tell him? Because he'd...
Yeah. No, not at all.
No, okay, good.
But she's like, I'll see you in like a month.
We do have 612 gold right now if we do want to buy anything else before we leave.
If we want, we could look at...
I don't think so.
I mean... Enchanting a weapon would be probably within the price range. It's about 1,000 gold to enchant.
God, D&D shit is so expensive.
Yeah.
Well, next time.
When are we going to come across another sack of 10 gold bars?
God damn it.
Not soon enough, I'll tell you what.
Candy!
So you got to keep working. Luckily, you all have like jobs.
Did we get a tally of how much money Rook brought back from the work that she was doing? Or
yeah, but it's like it's like 10 gold max for a normal work week or something like that. But it doesn't cost anything, so that's kind of the trade-off. Right. So unfortunately, y'all don't have quite enough gold to like enchant something or to buy like magical weapons. But you're so close. So with that, any other business? Are we good to roll out? Yeah, Kel is very sad, Aoife, that you're going, but he's happy that you're chasing your dreams or whatever, and he's really happy that you didn't tell him what you're doing, because he would totally freak out if you were, if you were going after an archfey. Totally freak out. Yeah. Oh, sweet. Sweet boy. Great. So then you all head back to the hut. What time of day do you want to head out to Storyville? Because, yeah, Rook, after talking to Rook about it, since it is another location in the wilds, travel is going to be much faster because space and distances bend so weird here. So probably within an hour, at most, you'll be there.
I mean, I think morning. We only have a week and we don't know what the fuck's going to happen.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah. Okay. So, like, right on the morning of the 22nd day, you boop on over to Kevin. All right. So you all assemble in the hut, all geared up, ready to go. Lou, I assume you made some kind of delicious breakfast.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm going to give inspiration to Aoife because you have magic and that's important right now. Because we are young babies with only normal stabby weapons.
It's okay, but you're level 4. You're getting there, you guys. You're getting there.
Yeah.
All right. So you make a delicious breakfast. You feel so inspired, Aoife, and you're all standing there ready to go. And you feel the house do its thing as it lifts and moves. And it seems like less than a minute before it stops again. And it all kind of surprises you. And the house sits back down. And even Rook looks surprised as she looks out the window and says, okay, I guess we're here. Wow, it's way closer than I thought. All right.
Is there any advice that you have for us on these changelings in this town?
Yeah, you say changelings, and she gets like it's almost like a knee-jerk, grossed-out reaction before she kind of smooths her face. Don't know what that's about. And she says, changelings are, I mean, they've pretty much all had it really rough, and they do not like Fae, most of them, for really good reasons. So just, I guess, definitely don't tell them about this. And she waves a hand at the house, and don't tell them about me, and waves at herself, and just be cool, I guess. Like, oh, and they might, I guess, corner you and want to talk about mortal stuff. So don't let them do that, I guess.
Why? Will they just talk our ears off, or?
Well, it's like a thing. Like, once they become changelings, they can't ever go back to the mortal realm, or they'd, like, actually die. It's like a fish, right? If you throw it out of the water, they die. So since they were mortal, a lot of them obviously, like, miss the mortal realm. So just, like, don't bring it up, probably.
And we're probably keeping our fake names.
Marnie, Saoirse, Franny.
I mean, yeah, they're not, you know, true fae, but you never know, so.
Well, they're not, but Penny is.
Right. Yeah, I don't know what that's about, because changelings don't like fae, but I don't know, maybe she was special or something. Whatever. And you see she's, like, loading arrows into her back and, like, strapping knives onto her entire body.
Amazing.
Okay. Well,
yep.
Gear up.
All right. And so you step out of the house, leaving safety and comfort behind, stepping into the Fey Wilds.
Yeah. Yep.
We set off.
Aha! And as you do so, immediately you are buffeted with just rain. Heavy curtains of rain. And as you have stepped into the Fey Wilds a few times now, again, everything is, of course, vibrant and just sensory overload as you're looking around, but you have never really been in weather like this. Like, the actual definition of, like, a dark and stormy night is absolutely what is slapping you in the face as you're looking around and, like, holding your eyes up to see through the curtains of water, and the wind is howling through these rustling trees that seem to bend almost to the point of snapping all around you. And it was morning where you were, but here now it is completely black. The sky has been just covered entirely by these thick, evil, malicious looking clouds. And you're just surrounded, yeah, by this horrendous weather. And far in the distance, you can see sort of maybe a large structure, like, through the woods. Maybe it's like a wooden or stone wall, but it's so hard to tell with this horrible weather. Also, the bend and snap joke was very funny.
just cracking myself up in silence.
I'm trying to do an intense description. That's okay.
I'm sorry.
They bend and snap, and it works every time.
It works every time.
Oh my god.
We're trudging through the rain.
Mm-hmm. Look out for the trees. They seem to be doing the bend and snap.
Rook's like, what is that? She puts a cloak. She's flipped it over her head to try and get some kind of cover from the rain.
Yeah, Lou has just booked it immediately upon the rain hitting her hair. Then just, it goes perfectly straight, and she's just like, motherfucker, and starts going for the structure.
all the time I spent.
Y'all may have seen Lou with a full set of curlers every night.
Oh, of course, in the bathroom, absolutely. Yeah. And so the hut seems to have landed, and now you can see it. Even though 24 hours have passed, you don't have to rub the paste on your eyes because you are newly bonded to the house. So you can just see it there.
Yay!
Which is very comforting as you're walking away from it. Like, seeing it sitting there and just knowing it's there and it's fine is very comforting as you're, like, walking through this hideous rainstorm. But you're in a little clearing in what looks like a pretty big forested area. So the trees are up and howling, and most of them don't have leaves on them. So you're getting kind of like a winter vibe, though there isn't any snow on the ground. So maybe it's like late fall ish in this area. So you have to wind your way through these thickets of trees towards this large structure. And it does become clear eventually, as you get within a few hundred feet of it, that it is the walls of a large wall that rings a town here. So you are just looking up at these logs that have been staked into the ground and then bound together. So it's probably about 15 feet high or so. So a very imposing wall around this structure. So think like colonial towns when you think of that ring around. And as you walk up closer to this, you can't see, like, there aren't obvious gateways or anything open, so it doesn't look like there's a lot of traffic or roads in and out, so you'll have to walk around until you find some kind of gate.
Left hand on the logs, running the ring around.
Like, yeah, as you're making your way through. And eventually you do, as you're feeling the slick wood and just getting more and more miserable by the hour.
Get a few splinters.
Getting the splinters, and you're like, this is awful. Eventually, you finally see these hooded lanterns swinging wildly in the wind, like their orange flames sputtering to stay lit against this drawbridge that has been inserted into the wall here. And the drawbridge is up. It is not open, so you can't just walk in. But by one of these swinging wild lanterns is a door, like a normal person-sized door, with a iron grill and like a slat on it that is closed.
Give a knock.
Yeah, you pound and like pound. A little bit after like yeah, against thunder rolls somewhere up in the distance, and you're like, God, like it's pounding on this door. And eventually, after far too long, you hear a shh. And the slot opens up, and you see or met with two eyes, one green, one orange, looking back at you. You can see a vaguely shadowy humanoid form on the other side of the door scrutinizing all of you, and you hear a voice say, "What do you want?"
"We seek the Pendragon Inn. We're travelers."
"What kind of travelers?"
"Mortal ones."
"Mortals? All of you?"
Mm-hmm.
And he looks at all four of you. You sure about that?
Human? Satyr? Well, I guess I'm a satyr, but I'm like from like the Empire kind of satyr, not like a satyr. Elf and half-orc. Very mortal. Can die. Almost did once. Remember? And then she turns to the, remember that time?
Especially if a tree falls on us.
Or if we die from hypothermia.
Drench.
Well then, you won't mind if we administer the test.
Looks around suspiciously.
I guess. What is the test?
Yeah, and as you're talking about the test and all this, Tony, this reminds you of something that happened like way, way back. We're going to do a little flashback right here when you're hearing about the test and it's kind of occurring to you. Where have you heard that before? So I imagine, Tony, as part of your military training, the majority of it was, of course, field work. So training exercises, learning how to build your endurance, learning how to use weaponry of all sorts. But part of Eldrin, you know, Empire military training is also learning about magical combatants, learning about the history of the Empire and famous battles. So that was probably scattered through your first year or two of official training. So maybe it was when you were at field camp. Probably you went through North Point as well, which is one of the most brutal training grounds that the military puts people through. One, because the environment is so arid and horrible that like conditions there are prime for making sure you have what it takes to stay in the forces. So it's one of these days when you're stuck in a classroom surrounded by maybe 20 other of your training squad mates or so. You're sitting in these kind of tiered bleacher seats, and there is a teacher droning on and on about something. Do you have a teacher in mind? Somebody that Tony thinks about either fondly or with regret to this day?
Oh, regret. She didn't like sitting in the classroom, for sure. She was always distracted. So I could see, like, a fellow half-orc, but older gentleman with, like, very large fangs and a kind of a big beer gut, but massive spectacles as well, trying to, you know, rouse the crowd and get them excited about the Empire.
Yeah, you know, and that's a lot of the purposes of these courses, because they usually have people come in from Phelan, from the capital, scholars to host these special lecture series or whatever. And yeah, it's, I think half the students are the, oh my god, like, this is really important, we should pay attention. And those are usually the students who grew up to be war mages, right? And then the other half are the legionaries or the soldier, foot soldiers sitting there like, yo. So where is Tony in this classroom? Is she like sitting in the back? Maybe are Doreen and Bashar there? Are you passing notes? What's... So this would be probably 2 years
Bashar's
ago?
Bashar's definitely in the back with me.
Yeah.
Bashar's definitely in the back with me. Doreen was a newbie, so...
Oh, yeah.
She was not in my class.
Oh, gotcha. Yeah, she's younger, so... Yeah, so you're lounging in the back, and you hear, you know, the droning voice of this teacher going on and on, and you catch something... While many fae possess the ability to change their form, there is a simple method for determining whether or not a creature is indeed a true fae. Miss Silvertail, what is that method? You hear your name, like, punch through whatever Bashar was just saying to you.
She swings her head up.
We're waiting, Miss Silvertail. Mm-hmm.
You know, there's so many methods.
Oh, yeah?
It can be hard to choose depending on what fae you're dealing with, right?
There's just a stony silence, and the teacher swings their head negatively and says, it would behoove you to pay more attention in class, Fetonia, if you ever hope to be a star member of the military. And clears his throat in that just that horrible way. Oh, that horrible way that he always does. And goes back with the long pointer stick to something he has written on the chalkboard. Anyway, the cold iron test is the answer I was looking for. Fae cannot stand the touch of unworked iron. When their skin comes in contact with it, there's always a noticeable effect. Though it may differ from species to species, most commonly the flesh will blacken, rot, smoke, sometimes combust into flame, blah, 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 like on and on and on this list goes. And as this memory fades out, and you're like, ah, the cold iron test. Maybe that's what this guy is talking about as we return to the present moment.
Is he still waiting? Is he still waiting on a response from us?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Tony will interject and just say, all right, bring on the cold iron.
And there's a hmm from the other side of the door. And then a lower slot opens up. And you can see a gloved hand, like a thick leather gloved hand, like you would wear maybe like with a, like a falcon. And holding some tongs, and this piece of black, rough iron comes out. All right, who's first? Give me your palm.
Tony walks right up and just, like, slaps the thing with her palm and grips it tightly.
Yeah, and he's like, you know, fusses and make sure you take off your glove so it will contact bare skin. And you do so, you pull off your sopping wet glove and, yep, it makes contact and it's just cold metal. And you hear sort of a surprised, from the other side of the door. Okay, who's next?
Well, that looks easy enough. Gets me out of the rain and Lou will grasp onto it as well.
Yep, and it's the same. You touch metal, and Tony didn't explain what, but Tony seemed really confident about it, but you're like, this is very weird. This is super weird. This guy in the gate is making you touch, like, this piece of metal. Yeah, so you're good.
Aoife will wait for Rook to do it first.
Rook looks nervous, and then looks at you.
I feel like the two of them are... kind of have, like, slowly turned to each other.
Yeah.
Like, kind of exchange those sort of nervous glances, like,
do we still
theoretically,
cool?
This shouldn't affect us, but it could.
Right. I think that is the exact same reflection, looking back, like...
And then Aoife will finally step forward, and, no, she'll take off her gloves, and with a wince, she'll hold out her palm.
Yeah, and you do, and as the iron makes contact, it feels warm in your palm. But other than that, nothing.
She tries to hold back visible relief, and she's just like, yep, this is totally normal.
Mm-hmm. I knew that was gonna happen as you step up, and Rook, yeah, sighs and takes off the glove and, like, winces and puts her hand on the iron and waits, and nothing happens. And the guy on the other side goes, all right, I'll open the gate. And you start to hear chains and gears turning on the far side, and very slowly the crack of the drawbridge as it gets lowered down, and the clanging it makes as it in the splat as it hits the mud of the area there.
Oh, so real quick, how tall is Rook now that she's like a full grown human?
She's like 6'3", 6'4". She's Tony sized for sure. She's huge.
Perfect smooching height, one could say.
She's so tall. Yeah, so as we step in, like, Aoife will give, like, a little squeeze on her forearm then to be, like, as, like, a compassionate squeeze of relief.
We did it.
To be like, oh.
And Rook makes that thing where she breathes out, like, the little corner of her mouth and kind of smiles at you awkwardly. Like, we did it. Okay. And she will then help you, like, step through the mud puddle up onto the thing, because you weigh like 10 pounds compared to her. So you see now that you're looking through this drawbridge, there is a little town that is completely surrounded by this ring of wood logs here. It's very small. You probably, just based on the number of buildings and stuff, you would say maybe 100 or so people here, like tiny compared to Coven, certainly. And you see a couple of large buildings that might be like stores or businesses, but immediately you can tell that everything seems closed. Everything is closed. There are no people in the streets. It's sort of eerie, actually. You can hear a couple of the business signs swinging in the wind, you know, those grinding like chain sounds of the swinging signs. And it's a, yeah. It's not great. And whoever let you in doesn't make their appearance known, so you don't know where they are.
So we don't see anyone on the other side of the door. They're just hidden.
No, just empty. An empty street lays out before you, and it looks like the street that leads from here just goes all the way, bisects the entirety of the town, and then there's one other main road that crosses by, and there's a central square with, like, a well and some benches, but nobody is there.
Are there street signs or anything?
Yeah, you can see a couple of street signs there. You can also see that there are, like, big street lamps, but none of them are lit, despite the dark.
There's a storm happening. I wouldn't blame anyone for not wanting to come out here and light those things.
I guess, but, like...
But let's just, like, hustle through this town and find this dragon place.
Yeah, I'm looking for Briar Rose Lane.
And it doesn't take you long at all to see all the streets in this town. There are like 6 streets. So tucked towards the back left corner, you see Briar Rose Lane. And it's one of those little street signs that there are 3 buildings right on the street. And so you see the sign for the Pendragon Inn. It's this very old school medieval style dragon on a crest of arms on the hanging above the door. And this building, unlike many of the others, you can see the edges of orange light coming from inside. Even though the curtains are drawn, it does look at least like there are people here.
I'm busting the door, and no, I'm just walking in like a normal human.
So loud. As you do open it, I mean, the wind howls and picks it up, and it slams anyway. So you step all soggy and miserable into this quaint little inn, and everything in here, it's pretty rustic. Most of the furniture and tables, chairs are just made of this same red wood, and there is a long bar, of course, and you can see various bottles stacked behind. There is a set of stairs at the back that leads up to whatever that second level is. You can see a couple doors that maybe lead off to kitchens or down to cellars, whatever. There are a few patrons scattered around, not as many as you would expect, maybe, on, like, a dark and stormy day night. Maybe 5 or 6 people. And they are all pretty different looking in appearance. At first glance, it seems like a normal collection of humanoid-type creatures that you might find in a big city. So you see, like, a human, elf, gnomes, that sort of thing. But on a second glance, they all have something a little bit weird about them. Some it's more noticeable than others, but like you're looking at this one person sitting in the corner who seems to have these twisted like butterfly wings that have sort of half grown out of their back. They've had to like cut circles into the shirt to accommodate these honestly painful looking things. You see another person in the corner has like one sad like drooping antenna that's sprouted like from their head that looks like some kind of insectoid thing. Couple people who have, yeah, just odd twisted limbs or weird skin things that look like maybe patches of something have grown there. And the person behind the bar, first glance, looks like a golden-scaled dragonborn. But as they turn to you to greet you, you can see half of their face has been consumed by, like, moss that seems to be sprouting from their skin and these, like, little red and white speckled mushrooms that grow on half their scalp, as they turn to you, twisting a glass, and says, "Oh, well, yours are certainly not from around here. Huh? Well, welcome. Welcome in. Put your stuff on the hooks, though. Can't have you getting mud all over my inn."
"For sure. Okay." And Lou just starts taking her things off and wringing her pin straight hair out, mm-hmm. and just kind of throws it up into a bun and is like, "Yeah, this is... more normal than I expected. I mean, this seems fine."
Rook is looking around like these people are aliens, honestly.
Yeah, so Tony's gonna be like, "This is normal?"
"I mean, he just said, 'Welcome, put your stuff on the hook.' You seem perfectly nice." "Seems fine."
"Well, I mean, people gotta drink somewhere and sleep somewhere."
"I'm just..." "Are there, like, stools up at the bar? Sorry."
"Yeah, yep. All the stools currently are empty, so you have your pick."
"Oh, yeah, Aoife will immediately pick one right in front of this gold dragonborn individual and be like, 'So what's your name?'" Start chatting them up.
"Yeah, I'm Oslo. Yeah, this is my place. I won't ask you your name, of course, but what brings you all here? We don't get a lot of... I mean, you must be mortal, right? You don't look like a changeling to me. Unless the guards are really, you know, letting it go."
"Nope, not yet, I suppose. But we are here because we have heard news that someone likes to occupy room 3 of this place, or did at some point." She throws kind of like a you-know-if-you-know glance at their way. It was like waiting to see if they react in any way to that.
Sure. So as you say this, the dragonborn nods and says, "Well, to be quite honest, the rooms here don't see much use. It's a pretty small place, mostly a drinking spot. So, you know."
"How long have you been working this place?"
"Oh, I mean, I've worked at the Pendragon 15 years or so. Got it from the original owner. So, it's been a while."
"What happened to the original owner? Is he still around town?"
No. He up and disappeared. You know, that's not too strange, though, with considering who we are, where this place is. It's an odd little life. We live here, but we try to make it work. Though, sorry you've kind of come at such a bad time. It's, not usually this gloomy, but, we've had our share of troubles in the last few days, so glad you made it into town safe."
"What's been happening?"
"There's, monster or something out there in those woods. Everything's locked down pretty tight, so you didn't see it?"
"What kind of monster? What does it do?" "No."
"Well, we don't really know. That's, part of the problem, but, we found one of our own the other day, kind of on the younger side, out cold in the woods. It doesn't seem to be anything wrong with him, except that he just won't wake up. And folks have been reporting this strange light, or this thing they see out there in the dark, and it's bad. So, whatever you came here for, it's probably not going to be here, or folks aren't going to be willing to help while we're dealing with that, if you catch my meaning." He gives you a very meaningful look back, Aoife.
Drift caught.
"Can I get you anything to drink, though? We do take gold here for you mortal folk."
"Oh, thank God." Yes, I would love some hot tea. That would be great.
Sure. Sure.
Mead for me, please.
Absolutely. Rook will say two of those.
Hot toddy.
Gives you a nod.
Hot alcohol, please.
Yes. Yes. Yeah, and he'll slide over those drinks to you. Excuse me, I'm gonna...
What's that gonna put us back?
Oh, yeah, it's like a silver piece for each, so like four silver pieces, which is kind of on the expensive side. But you are in a tiny little town in the middle of nowhere, so...
Do we know how long ago Penny was supposed to be staying here?
Like 80 years.
80 years, yeah.
So before this guy took over.
Yeah. He clearly knows more, but we're gonna have to figure out this fucking monster.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I say we rent out room 3 and investigate. Ooh. It may have been 80 years, but we should go in there.
Yeah, I mean, if nobody uses them, right? Mm-hmm. Good call. Yeah. Yeah, so before he, like, moves away, Lou will grab him and be like, hey, actually, could we rent room 3 if nobody's using it?
Couple of rooms, 3 and 4.
Yeah, he pauses for a bit, and, well, who am I to turn away business? Sure. Be a gold piece per room, unfortunately. Costs being what they are.
Sure.
All right, well, I'll dole out this round, and then I'll go upstairs and get that dusted for you. You sure you want to be staying here, though, with that beast out there in the woods?
Where else are we going to go?
I don't exactly feel like hoofing it out to the next village over with a wild beast out there, but perhaps we could look into what it wants or how to wake up the person who's apparently asleep.
Yeah, well, I don't have any more wisdom to offer that, but Hayden was the kid who's still sleeping. His folks are his adopted folks are in the house next door. Sure, if you're offering to help, we're all desperate for some answers. Any of you a doctor?
I could mend a wound, but nothing. Well, perhaps I could do something, actually.
She's very talented. She doesn't give herself enough credit. I'm more of like a feed you good soup kind of doctor, so I don't think I'll be much help.
Yeah, I'm about the same. So, well, you're certainly welcome to try, but I'll leave you to your drinks and go get that room cleaned up for you.
Oh, no need. I mean, honestly, we're already a mess.
I think the spiders have gotten real fierce in there, and you haven't seen spiders till you've seen wild spiders, so.
God.
Oh, yeah. He comes out from behind the counter, and he just walks upstairs. He clearly isn't the type of innkeeper to, like, worry that nobody's at the bar. It's like, there's 100 people. If somebody steals something, everybody's gonna fucking know, right? You can see that a couple of the people sitting around have drifted out of the tavern since you arrived, as if sus about, just suspicious of who you are and what you're doing here. But yeah, he walks upstairs, he grabs like a broom from the corner and a rag and heads up to clean the rooms for you. So you're pretty much alone other than like the 3 people who are doing everything they can not to look at you. Yeah, from their own tables.
Sounds like a moment for Aoife to speak, because I'm not going to get anything out of them.
So looking around the room, Aoife's going to pick someone who she can tell what they're drinking.
Mm.
And she's going to pour another cup of that and then bring her own over and sit down next to them. And strike up a conversation.
Yeah. So you see, like a halfling woman sitting in one corner. And as you walk up, she looks at you with these giant eyes. And you can see her skin has been patterned with like diamonds, like a diamond pattern. Almost like it looks like ink stamped onto her skin, but it's just been printed across her entire body. And she makes a ooh! Sound as you sit down.
She'll slide the cup across the table and she'll say, I know it's probably an odd thing to have strangers in town, but we're not looking to make enemies. I mean, we've come in search of something, but, you know, for the people here, if you're suffering worries, we'd like to help you unburden with that. What can you tell me about this monster, about what's going on?
Oh, well, it's like Oslo said, it's a terrible thing. It's a big thing. Out there in the dark, it's fast. I guess, but nobody's really gotten a good look at it. This weather, you know, and it's been here for, I guess, a few days. And ever since we found Hayden in the woods, it just seems to be getting worse and worse. And now there's this light that you see sometimes, this silver glowing light just out there in the woods. So, I mean, it's real bad. We can't even leave. You know, we've turned off all the lights and we're hoping it'll just go away, but people keep seeing it, you know, and Hayden's not getting any better. And some of us have a lot of magic, you know, but it's just not getting any better.
Of course. Has Hayden been the only victim?
Well, the only one we found like that. Yes.
How have you found the others?
No, I mean, nobody else has been, I guess, attacked per se, but we're all pretty scared. We've had some close calls. Some people have sworn that they've seen it. They say this thing is as big as a house, and it has sometimes four legs or sometimes two. There's just not a lot, and we're in the wilds. It could be anything, and we're changelings. Nobody likes us, so maybe it's just, I don't know. It could be anything.
It could be. About where does it change every time the light appears, or does it tend to happen in a certain place out in the woods?
I don't know, but it's been seen all around. You know, the woods are all around, and it's been seen in the woods.
Okay. All right.
So people are either disappearing or being found in a coma.
Well, nobody else has disappeared, but it seems like any time somebody goes outside the walls, this thing is waiting. So they come back. So Hayden is the only one who's ended up like that. But we've been real careful not to go out there. But we've seen it a couple times, so we know it's still there. I'm surprised you came into town and you didn't see it. You must have gotten real lucky.
Apparently.
No, it seems to know we're here, and I think it's waiting. We all think it's waiting.
For people to leave or something in particular?
I don't know. Probably one of us to leave. So it can do whatever it did to us. Same way it did to Hayden. So maybe it's hungry. I don't know. Hey, what are you, come some kind of adventurers?
Aye, we're the Venture Maidens.
What's that? Is that like a band? Is that like a...
Yeah, Aoife, when are you coming out with business cards?
Oh, I could make so.
Hey, are you guys mortals?
You know what we are?
Where are you guys from?
Hella tired from our travels.
Have you ever been to Trasiana? I have family there. I used to live there. Have you ever been there? It's a beautiful city.
Lou is just biting her bottom lip and looking at Rook. With a panic in
Rook
her
is going,
eyes.
Mm-mm-mm-mm. She's like, no, do not engage. Yeah. She's like, Marnie, I have to go to the bathroom. Come with me.
Let me help you with that. Sometimes it's hard to get everything. I gotta go.
Yeah. And we'll pull you away.
The deepest exhale.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you. You don't actually need help, though, right?
God, no.
Okay, just checking. I would have. I mean, okay.
She just looks at you in disgust.
Aoife doesn't believe Rook, or, well, not necessarily doesn't believe her, but doesn't believe that, like, believes that Rook saying that is more than that just Rook doesn't trust anyone, and that, therefore, no stranger should be afforded any kindness. But so Aoife sitting there with this woman, you know, hearing like, have you ever been to Trasiana? Aoife will regale this woman with the tale of getting a white chocolate mocha from a little cart down a twisted back alley, cobblestone laden alley. And aww. Like the magic of their night as she just, you know, with full of effect and enchantment.
Yeah. And this woman, just as you're saying this story, just tears are welling up in her eyes, just for sheer delight hearing about this place and remembering.
She'll finish it and she'll say, I do have a friend who lives there, so I might expect to be there again
If you want, you could write me a message, and we're staying in room 3 and 4. Slip it under the door, and the next time we're there, I'll look them up, and I'll pass that on if I can.
Really? That would be amazing. Thank you. I have so much family there that I...
Anything you'd like to say.
Okay, that's so nice of you. Thank you.
What shall I call you? I'm Saoirse.
You can call me, Dot. I know it's ironic now. And she, like, waves at her checkered, like, the diamond pattern. But it was my name!
And Aoife will give a little clink of her glass and a cheers and will say, well, new friendships, Dot.
Okay, I have a lot to get writing, so it was so nice meeting you, but you don't get eaten or anything before tomorrow, okay?
I wouldn't try Muffet.
Okay. Thank you. And she puts a hand. I'm sorry, I don't have any favors or anything to offer you. That's not really how changelings work. Is that okay?
And Aoife, waves her off immediately and says, No, this is just kindness. As my father, he was a great storyteller, and he taught me how powerful telling stories can be, sharing them, giving them life. And so any stories that I could pass on for you, I'm happy to give someone that life, to give you that life, because it's a gift.
Yeah, and she's gotten, like, nonverbal right now. She's just trying to, like, hold herself together and, like, taps your head and hops up and waves a hand as she heads out of the bar. Because back to her house to write a shitload of letters now that for you to deliver next time you're in.
Mm-hmm.
Chelsea on him. Yeah. And eventually Oslo does come back downstairs and... The broom and the rag look pretty dirty as he like throws them in the bucket, under the bar. And he's like, well, it ain't fancy, but your rooms are waiting. So I guess you want another round or, you know what, I'll be here.
Any food you can recommend around here?
Oh, yeah, we got some stuff. Got a nice, call it everything soup, brewing in the back. Not a lot of fresh stuff right now since we can't, go outside of town, but we can set you up.
Oh my god, I'm going to come back here one day.
Ooh. Well, it's just all our fields and orchards are outside, and we can't go out there or the beast, It's usually much better, I promise.
Well, I mean, once things clear up, I have a great food cart that I'll bring through until you guys can get everything situated again. Really good. I mean, I think it's really good. So far, mortal cuisine, but I'm gonna get some fusion, I think, going soon. So,
well, I mean, folks here certainly miss mortal food. So, if you're willing to cater to a bunch of changelings, then I think we sure would love that.
Well, I would absolutely cater to a bunch of changelings. I don't really care what you are. Everybody deserves a good meal and a full stomach.
Yeah, he raises his eye crests and kind of looks genuinely surprised when you say that. Some interesting folks, but I'll get that food for you. And he disappears into the back kitchen.
We can spend 6 more silver because I don't want change dingling.
Amongst a pile of gold pieces, you don't want more change jingling.
Oh. Got it. You can hear the difference in tone. I don't like it. Also, I got the other ones in paper rolls, to really be able to...
Fair.
Yeah.
How are those people now?
Oh, no.
Throw away my quarters. I don't want this. No, I'm just kidding. Just kidding.
Sweet. So do you want to keep hanging out here? Because he can certainly get you drinks, refills, food, or you can check out the rooms. Or you can go check out Hayden. Apparently, he's in the house next door. So you have a few different options.
It should still be morning. So maybe we just eat the food and then go over, see what's going on with Hayden.
Yeah. So you head back out into the nasty, horrible weather. But luckily, you don't have very far to go because just like Oslo said, there is a little thatched house next door. Again, all very rustic. Everything's made of wood. This is a very simple life these people have managed to carve out for themselves. So you knock on the door and a individual who looks very tall, very large, covered in golden fur, sort of like a bugbear, but a little bit more human-sized, it's hard to tell, opens the door and looks at you expectantly.
Hello, we're adventurers, and we've heard about recent tale of a strange light that's appeared in the woods and has taken your dear Hayden down to a coma, and I do have some healing capabilities, and I thought, well, maybe we could pop in and ask about it and see if we could do something, because we've heard you've fallen on hard times recently.
Okay, I guess it couldn't hurt. And he kind of opens up the door and just lets you all into the small parlor. And he's like, Hayden's room is in the back.
I can't promise anything, but, you know, I do have some small talents. And maybe our dear herbalist over here can fix up maybe some kind of concoction. But, I mean, can you tell me about what happened? Did you see it? What? Who discovered him?
Yeah. He puts like a fuzzy hand to his face and kind of rubs his eyes. Sort of trying to catch up with you and all of you in his house and looking at each of you stranger than the last as you're stepping through the door. Well, he was found in the woods. So he's a woodcutter. So he's out there quite a bit. And so one of the other boys who do sort of the same kind of work just went to a normal site where they've been, you know, chopping down these big trees, and he was just there in the middle of the clearing. Nothing seems to be wrong with him. I mean, there's some like scratches and bruises, like maybe he fell or something, but that's pretty typical. He's a pretty outdoorsy kid, you know. But he just won't wake up. We're kind of at our wit's end.
And how long has he been out?
It's been 2 days. So we don't know what to do. We're doing the best we can to, you know, try and force feed him and stuff, but
has anybody else gone out to that same area to cut down more trees? I mean, I assume that you guys have to send some people. You're gonna run out eventually.
Well, I mean, that kid who went and you know, found him. Right after, when he was picking up Hayden and bringing him back, he swore he saw that thing, you know, out there. And luckily, he's a strong kid, and he ran back with Hayden on his back. He ran right home.
What's his name?
Dimitri. So, big troll-looking fellow. But, nice kid. Couple other people, obviously, you know, went back, tried to see if they could find anything. But again, it's the same kind of story. It's whatever that thing is, it's waiting out there. And since we don't know what it did to Hayden, we figure it's better to run. So we've been kind of cooped up here.
How long have you guys been logging in that area before this event occurred?
Oh, plenty of times. It's a nice copse of trees. You know, we made a deal with the treants, kind of guard the grove. So, you know, non-magical wood is pretty hard to come by in the wild. So when you find a good spot, you hang on to it. So he's been out there hundreds of times. It's not too far. There's no reason why it should have been different than any other time except for that thing. But yeah, and he points back towards the bedroom door and opens it up, and you can see a very modest bedroom inside. And he lights, you know, a lantern in there, and you can see, yeah, it looks like a human kid, maybe 15, 16, just... It looks like he's sleeping in the bed.
How long ago did you say this happened? When was he found?
2 days
ago. Yeah.
Well, I don't know if we're going to learn much here or that I can help out much, but I feel like I'm a better use out there trying to find the creature.
I mean, whatever you can do. We've faced plenty of weird stuff living out here, you know, the way we do, but we've never seen nothing like this. And it's not magic, and it's not a curse. We've already checked. So, I don't really know.
Lou's gonna approach and kind of look over the body, and I'd like to roll an investigation check to kind of see if I can find any marks or anything like that. 12 plus 6, 18.
Yeah, so you're looking over the body, and just like he said, you see some scratches and bruises, like, from somebody who maybe was standing and then suddenly collapsed on the ground, right? Like, there's a nasty bruise on a cheek where he probably made contact, and just some lots of, like, work wounds from working with axes and out in the woods. Some scrapes and stuff, but nothing that seems out of place. Yeah, other than that, like, cheek bruise where, yeah, he must have just been standing and then, boop, toppled over suddenly, which is a little weird. But yeah, there's no, like, gashes or bite marks or anything of that sort. So, and the kid, he's breathing normally. His responses are, like, when you shift him, he goes, like somebody sleeping, right? But no matter how much you shake him or do anything, he just doesn't wake up.
I would say Aoife would just go ahead and, you know, try to cast a lesser restoration over him, because that's the best that she knows she can do, but not really expecting much.
Yeah. Yeah, so you do. You cast the lesser restoration, and how do you cast the spell again? It's like the thread, or what are you doing?
So as she goes over to them, and I imagine, like, lesser restoration is kind of like repairing, you know, like a hole in a crocheted and like a hand crocheted blanket, and kind of get the sense of, like, you know, where things have fallen apart, and, you know, kind of magically helps tie them together to cure them of their diseases or conditions.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think when you're using your magic to reach out, and I think there's always that first layer, because you are repairing, right? You're getting the sense of the thing, like, what's wrong? You're trying to figure out what's wrong. And there's nothing that occurs to you surface. It all seems fine. And your spell is channeling, trying to figure out where to go, right? What to fix. And you feel it coursing through this body. And then once you get, like, deeper into the stuff that's beneath the skin, it's odd. Your spell just, you feel it spiral and disappear into nothingness. There's nothing there. It's like this huge something that you usually feel with a person is just gone. It's like this is just a body of skin and bones, and there's no person here. And your spell sputters out, like having encountered that weird void inside this boy.
And she looks, you know, she as her, you know, you see this kind of, like, magical yarn that, like, kind of extends from her hand over Hayden, and it kind of sputters and fizzes and sort of flares out uselessly, and she looks really perplexed and tilts her chin off to the side, and she looks at everyone and she says, "It's like someone has taken what makes him him. Like, there's a body here, and it's asleep, but no one is there to dream. Like, it's just a body that's alive with nothing tethered to it." And she kind of, you know, will look over to a Rook and be like, we've seen silvery light come from, you know, fey creatures. Do you think one of the courts might have abilities that can do this?"
You see her kind of shudder too, like, while you're describing that, and she's like, spooky. I guess, I mean, he's asleep, so that seems like a sleeping court thing, I guess, but, like, maybe some of the others, I mean, the Withered Court is all about death and shit, so that's a thing, but also, I don't see why the courts would bother coming all the way out here and preying on a tiny little town. It seems more like just, I don't know. And also, like, a beast, that's the courts are all, you know, she makes a jack off motion. They're not, you know, they're not about, like, camping and stuff. So I don't know. She looks at you and tilts her head as, like, "I'm sorry, I'm being unhelpful."
And yeah, Aoife will kind of slowly nod and process this, and, you know, we'll look to Lou and Tony.
I mean, I don't know anything about magic, but I guess our next step, if we can't do anything here, would be to look for Dimitri and get his story. And also, just random question, sir. Is the weather always this fucking terrible here? Or is this new?
Well, in the wilds, it comes and goes, but it's been pretty bad the last few days.
Would you say since this occurred, or...?
Yeah, I guess so. Maybe a little bit before.
Hmm.
I mean, it could be related, but, you know, sometimes it's stormy, sometimes it's... I don't know. Maybe.
Hmm.
I don't know of any fae that can control the weather and do whatever you were talking about. And he looks terrified after hearing your mm-hmm. description, Aoife, of what's happening. So he is deeply concerned by what you have said.
Did we get his name?
No, you haven't. It's going to be Barry.
Barry?
Sorry, I can't. So many names.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. B-A-R-R-Y, before you fuckers start doing puns. So.
okay.
And Rook also shrugs and says, I mean, we could talk to the kid or we could just go kill this thing. You know what I mean? She looks at you, Tony. Like.
You know, meta-wise, Sage is on that level.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know that we'll gain much more beneficial information from this Derek guy, but. And- You know, I'm really interested in going out there and talking to some of those trees and seeing if they can give me any information.
I just feel like we're here now. And if he has nothing new, we can find out really quick and we can just go. I'm not saying we have to sit down and grill him, but if we don't plan and we miss a piece of information because of it, I'm going to be...
Let's head along. I mean, look at these people. They're clearly not fighters. I mean, no offense. She waves a hand at Barry, but maybe it's something they could have just fought. I mean, this thing attacked a kid alone. How bad can it really be, right?
Did you not just hear about
we're actual
a body without
bounty hunters? This is our job.
Yeah. This is our job, but we don't know what the fuck this is. It's also our job to be knowledgeable as possible. What if that were to happen to one of you guys?
Move on. Sounds like the kid is... I'm sorry, again? Barry?
Yeah, sorry, no offense, Barry.
brain dead. I've seen this before. I've seen this happen to some people. It's terrible. It's awful. But the fastest way to put an end to it is to stop the thing that caused it.
Yeah, I mean, what if the kid's just getting worse? You know, every second we spend here looking for clues or whatever.
I see you and I hear you, but I'm gonna need 30 more minutes. I think that's reasonable.
Uh-huh.
It's a small town. It's not gonna take us long. Quick in and out.
All right, well then let's go. Getting antsy.
Okay, I love it when people listen to me. Okay. Yeah, so where can we find Derek really quick and just check in on him?
Yeah, and Barry Dimitri, yeah. And Barry will give you some directions and you all can step back out into the rain and walk around and head to the house, and you have a very similar experience where it's you find a bunch of changelings kind of living together in this house, and Dimitri comes forward and is just reticent about everything, and he speaks to you in a very slow and gentle voice and explains pretty much exactly what you heard. He went to this spot. He saw Dimitri just lying there on the ground, not moving, or Hayden just lying there, not moving. So he went over to check on him, rolled him over, found out there was nothing really wrong with him. And then there was something that he saw, something big. He swears it maybe had four legs and like big horns. And there was something shiny and a glowing light. And then he picked up Hayden and he ran the hell out of there because he had no idea what that was. Just moving through the trees. He just got out of there. And that's all he really saw.
Lou purses her lips and looks at him and is like, And there's really nothing else that you can give me so that I wasn't wrong about coming here, correct?
He looks at you and he's like, no, I'm sorry.
It's fine. And she picks up her notebook and writes down, Dimitri, useless. And turns around. And she crosses her arms. She's like,
Rooks murks in a corner. You can feel her doing it, even if you can't see her doing it.
Tony looks at her from across the room like, yeah.
Lou finally just goes, you guys were right. Let's go kill this thing.
Oh, who's up for a nature walk?
Not yep. me in this rain, but let's always. Do it anyways.
And yeah, you see Rook tossed her like the big pack of stuff that she had from before, just dropped it off at the room. But now she still has her crossbow, her quiver, and then all of the knives, all the knives on her body. And as you step out into the streets, you see she reaches into the pocket of her cloak and she pulls on a glove, seemingly out of habit, and unwraps these small things. And you can kind of see them glinting in the light, whatever she has. They look like arrowheads. And as you're walking, she's gingerly, like, attaching them to bolts on her arrows.
Those are the good shit. I want those. But on my knives.
Yeah. With now the cold iron test that you've heard about and some shit that Rook has mentioned before, you suddenly are putting together that those are probably cold iron arrows. Even in back in episode one, when she hit that thing with those arrows and it freaked out, it's starting to make a lot of sense.
It's all coming together. All right,
where do we start?
I guess we get directions from Barry about where this, actually, no, let's fucking get directions from Dimitri so he does something mm-hmm. for us.
You go back inside, you're like, where is it? And he's like, oh my god, it's like a minute that way, and you walk out of town.
I hope that's really his voice.
He's like, oh no.
He's a Muppet.
Yeah. So yeah, you can head back out. You have to go to the main gate out of town because it's the only way in or out. And it's like a 2-minute walk turned into a 5-minute walk because of the miserable weather and the mud to get to this spot. And it doesn't look too much different from any other spot in the woods other than you can see a mossy pile now of half-felled logs waiting to be chopped and sectioned off. And there is a kind of a cleared space where you see several stumps where clearly this is where the work is done. You can also see a couple axes that are now starting to rust strewn about the place. So it looks like, yeah, like the boy said, they just, whatever the hell was there, they just left it and abandoned the space. Yeah, and Rook has got her cloak up over her face again. All right, detective. You want to look for clues again? She yells at you, Lou.
Yeah, I'm going to fucking look for clues. I'm going to go ahead and start investigating the crime scene.
The crime scene. We got a notebook, so.
Oh, yeah.
You're the detective.
Can't take it out now because my ink will get all wet.
What a tragedy! Rook yells through the howling wind.
You're the one who gave us so many rules! You're the reason I have this! And she's like going through and like sticking her face so close to the ground and the stumps because it's so fucking hard to see in the rain.
Yeah, go ahead and make me an investigation with disadvantage, considering.
No! I got a 19 on the die before.
It is so bad, and it has been raining like this, I guess, for 2 days, like...
Yeah, I got an 8.
Yeah. God, you are doing your best as you're looking around, and clearly any tracks there were are gone, and you're not seeing anything obvious, like snap branches or whatever, and really you shine in, like, urban environments, so this is all just... terrible as you're looking around trying to get any kind of sense of what's going on. And the rest of you, while Lou is crawling around looking for clues, what are you doing?
If the point is that we're trying to seek this thing out, I think Aoife would use her light cantrip and cast it on her rapier so that it would cast off sort of a silvery light, thinking maybe that we can attract the attention of this thing.
Cool. Yeah, so you light this bad boy up and you're standing there in the middle of the clearing. Cool. Tony, what are you doing?
Tony wants to engage with the plant life around.
Yeah.
Specifically the trees that are still standing, clutching the lily brooch that her mother, or buckle, we decided it was, that her mother gave her. And wants to, speak to the trees and ask if they know anything about this creature. What can they tell us about it?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, so you walk up to one of these trees that are tall and ancient and have been here forever, of course, bare of leaves and ready for winter. So as this slow voice comes to you, it's the voice of someone old and tired and ready to go to sleep for a while, as the trees kind of creak at your presence in a way that acknowledges you're there and they're there and ready to answer your questions. What do you ask?
First of all, hello, wise and ancient one. Mm-hmm. I would love to know what you have seen of a beast that is told to have roamed around and attacked someone in this very area on four legs, glowing eyes, and horns.
Yes, a visitor walks here, an unwelcome one, a sad and hungry thing, not of this place, has walked here. It looks like us, but it is not us.
Do you know how it hurt that young man?
We saw, but do not know. It came upon the boy, and the boy fell. And then there was the eye. It seems to seek another.
Another person, or one of its own kind?
Another eye. First there was none, then the boy fell. Then there was one, and now it wants two eyes. You should beware, young one. It comes. It is running. Now we can feel it.
Thank you. And she'll step away from the tree and say, the thing is coming. It's headed our way right now. We gotta get ready.
You hear a clack immediately up of a crossbow bolt being loaded as Rook points off into the darkness, kind of spinning around. She's dropped the cloak, and now you can see her large, naturally curly hair is just like sopping against the sides of her face as she's spinning into the night, trying to see anything. Because boy, is it dark. And you really just have the silver light of Aoife's rapier. And she's like, fuck human eyes, man. And she's looking off into the tree line. So, yeah, Lou, you're not finding anything with that roll, quite honestly. And you hear this thing is coming.
Yeah. She was like crawling on her hands and knees trying to find something.
Your pants are so muddy.
Everything is muddy. There's mud where the sun don't shine at this point. but she just is going to stand back up and take out her knives and just kind of scan the area with her 120 feet of dark vision.
Oh, that's super sexy dark vision. Yeah, so you all, I guess, assume like a back-to-back, like a four, like a triangle.
Charlie's Angels.
Yeah, Charlie's formation. Angels in the middle. Yeah, as you're all looking in the cardinal directions, waiting.
And as the camera pans around the four of us back-to-back, Tony screams out, be careful of your eyes. This thing seems to be after your eyes, or eyes in general.
What? Rook says, at the same time.
Maybe we shouldn't look at it directly in the eye. I don't know how this thing works, but that's its goal.
Oh my god! You should have said that before! As, so it's probably you, Lou, who sees this first, because your dark vision is so much better than everybody else's. But far, far away, in between the trees, you see a mote of bobbing silver light. And it only looks like a small thing, like a pinprick. And as you focus on it, trying to see through the mist and the rain and the downpour, you can see that this spot is growing and growing brighter as whatever it is running very quickly towards you. And you can see the outline of this shape. And as you alert everybody else, I'm assuming you can all kind of turn your attention towards this thing. It is a large creature that it's hard to see exactly what's going on because it seems to be made of bark or vines, something twisted together to form this bipedal body that is lurched over, running at full speed towards you. And you can see that the eye, that silver thing, is seated in its head, whatever the head of this thing is. And this crown of horns, like antlers, sprouts out of both of its head. And the silver light of the eye seems to be reflecting on a mirror suspended between these mm-hmm. antlers. And it's surging forwards as this thing is alien. It's strange. It's like nothing you've ever seen as it towers up and over you and creaks back its arms that are made of these twined branches. And you are staring at the one silver eye in the face. It's fixated on you. But the other socket seems quite empty as it gazes down and the rain beats and a peal of thunder hails from above. And that's where we're going to end the episode for this week. Fun, 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 fun!
Such fun!
We in for a big fight.
I know. I'm actually really excited. I miss fighting things. Like, downtime.
It's been a few episodes.
Hella fun, but I'm ready to kick ass.
We got to kick ass. We got to take names. It's like I was saying, I think offline, but we can say it now online. I think we're within 10 episodes probably of spring endings. Ooh. And the first arc of this. Yeah, of this campaign. So it's going to be hot and heavy making it to that finale for that arc. So it's go, go, go. So don't worry. Don't worry. But yeah, so thank you everybody so much for joining us for this episode. Episode 21 of Venture Maidens. We are so happy you're here. We loved having you here. And if you like the show, please do consider liking, subscribing, making sure you throw us a review on whatever podcast catcher app you're listening to this on. And of course, for all of you who support us on Patreon, we want to say thank you so much. We could not do the show without you. Patreon is a wonderful website where folks just like you can go and donate monthly to the creators they love. And the income we get from Patreon is 100% of our income. So everything y'all donate is exactly what we put into making the show better and brighter and doing things like campaign books and con appearances and just getting new shiny stuff. So thank you. So we like to take some time to thank our top tier patrons here. So let's go through the list, starting with Arnie's cohorts. I want to say a huge thank you to Cody Becker at Cody Rolls for on Twitter.
Thank you, Debbie.
Thanks, Curry.
Thank you, Muffin at the one on Drury Lane.
Thank you so much, Nissa McKinnon.
Thank you, Richie113 from our Discord server.
And Farrah's Drinking Mates, thank you, Chris.
Thank you, Markalai.
Thank you so much, Kevin.
Thank you, Fable.
Hey, Tony. Thanks.
Tony. Thank you, Tony. But that's it. That's everything. So thank you so much, everybody. And until next time.
Venture away,
everybody. Bye, guys.